Okay, so now that we have Emily Reeves from Rutgers University, and she's going to talk about probability in the Everett computation.
Okay, so right, this is a talk about probability in the Everett interpretation of quantum mechanics, specifically about the conceptual status of those probabilities. I'm interested in the Mandelbrot interpretation because it's promising to give us a way to be realists about quantum mechanics without having any hidden variables, without having any dynamical collapse rules, and also without having any unwanted concepts like measurement or observer or classical system down at the level of the foundations of a theory. However, it's often been concluded that whatever the physical virtues of this interpretation would otherwise be, we're going to have to reject Emanuel's interpretation because it's thought we can't make adequate sense of quantum probabilities in Emanuel's interpretation. So what I'm going to try to argue is that that objection is mistaken. I'm going to try to show how we can make adequate sense of quantum probabilities if we're Emanuel's theorists. Okay, so here's an outline of the talk. In section one, I'll say what I intend to mean by Mandelbrot's interpretation. So since Everett's original paper in 1957, the Mandelbrot's interpretation has been developed in lots of different ways. So the first thing I need to do is tell you which version I'm interested in talking about. I'm interested in the decoherence-based approach to the Mandelbrot's interpretation. So we tried to solve the preferred basis problem by appealing to the theory of dynamical decoherence. So I'll say roughly how that's supposed to work, and why you might think there's going to be a severe difficulty with understanding what probability means in that sort of interpretation. Then in section two, I want to talk about the decision-theoretic approach to probability in the Everett interpretation. This is the approach that's been developed over the last 6 or 7 years, primarily by David Deutsch and David Wallace. The idea here is to consider the following question. If you have a rational agent who believes that a Mandelbrot's version of quantum mechanics is true, how is such an agent going to make practical decisions? So I'll say roughly how that program is supposed to work. Sections 1 and 2 are really just serving as background to my talk. I'm going to be going through a fairly large amount of information relatively quickly and just asking you to accept for the sake of argument that these programs go through. The reason for doing that is the question I want to focus on in my talk is the question of whether or not, if we can get this far, we've got everything we need. So in section three, I'm going to give you a reason for suspecting that the answer to that question might be no. That is a reason for thinking that even if we grant all the decision theoretic claims that Deutsch and Wallace et al. Have been making, we still can't accept the Mandelbrot's theory. Roughly the idea here is going to be, these guys are asking the wrong question, apparently. These guys are asking the question of how you go about making practical decisions if you've somehow come to believe in Mandelbrot's interpretation. But what we're really interested in is whether we have any reason for taking the theory seriously in the first place. So in section three, I'll start trying to get you worried about that question. And then in section four, I'll try to solve the problem that I've raised. I'm going to try to argue that if we grant the claims I make up to this point, then a solution to this problem follows. And hence that worries about probability don't, at the end of the day, give us any reason to reject the Mandelbrot's interpretation. Okay, so what is the Mandelbrot's interpretation? Why does it have a problem with making sense of probability? We're trying to be no-collapse theorists, and we're also trying not to be hidden variable theorists. The immediate problem with going for that sort of theory is it seems that things like Schrodinger's cat show that such a theory is bound to be in blatant contradiction with everyday experience. So it seems that if you measure the state of your radioactive system, and you get the state of the cat to be correlated with whether or not the atom has decayed, then it seems that according to a no-collapse interpretation, you get absurd predictions like a certain time later, you're going to have a cat in a mixed state of being alive and being dead. And since we never see such cats, this seems to be a bit of a problem. The Mandelbrot's interpretation's answer to that is to say, you're thinking of these mixed states in the wrong way. It's not the case that at this later time we have a cat in a mixed state of being half alive and half dead. Rather, it's the case that we have two copies of the universe in quantum superposition with one another. In the first copy, in the first branch, if you like, there's a live cat, and in the second branch, there's a dead cat. So slogan, which gives us the first pass at what this Mandelbrot's interpretation is going to look like, is the following. When a quantum measurement is performed, the world, the universe, splits into multiple branches, and each possible outcome is actually realized in some branch. This is obviously a toy version of a theory. If this was really the theory, we wouldn't have solved the problem of measurement at all, because we've still got this word here. But the idea is we can get this story to emerge from a fundamental quantum level at which the concept of measurement does not appear. So here's a second pass. Attempt to say what this sort of many worlds interpretation is going to be. I'm going to borrow some of the language of consistent histories to say how we construct the interpretation. The idea is you've got a two-level proposal. So at the level of fundamental reality, you don't have any of this splitting going on, you don't have the concept of measurement, all you have is the quantum state undergoing unitary evolution. But the idea is if you want to interpret this theory, you're going to have some idea of how to hook up quantum reality to the macroscopic world of everyday experience. And according to the many worlds interpretation, in order to do that, you have to first decompose your quantum state into a parallel set of approximately decohering history. Then you have a preferred basis problem. So you first decompose it into histories, and then you look for everyday objects like cats and people and tables inside individual histories rather than spread across the whole quantum state. If you go through this sort of interpretation, the first problem you have to solve is the preferred basis problem. This is the problem of which history set you're going to use for your interpretation. We know, for example, that just requiring formal consistency in the sense of the consistent history approach is far too permissive. That doesn't narrow down to anything like a unique basis. So the answer that I'm presupposing here is that we've managed to solve this preferred basis problem by using a theory of dynamical decoherence, which places stronger constraints on the preferred basis than just formal consistency. If that's true, then we hope and expect to get the following sort of result. Given an appropriate initial condition assumption, we're going to get an emergent branching structure in the sense that when you write down your set of histories, you're going to have, at early times, the same projector in lots of histories in your set. At later times, there's going to have been some bifurcation going on. So at this later time, T2, we have one projector here and a different projector over here. So diagrammatically, we represent that sort of situation by these branching tree diagrams. By time going up the page, now we can identify the location of measurement events or splitting events as nodes on this tree. But because this only appears at the emergent level, the location of these nodes doesn't have to be precisely defined. So that's the idea. This is the first thing that I want you to accept for the sake of argument so that I can ask questions about whether or not it's good enough. So accept for the sake of argument that somehow we've managed to get from just having this at the level of fundamental reality to this sort of branching structure at an emergent level. Okay. Now we want to talk about why we might worry about the interpretation of probability in this sort of picture. Yeah.
Not on the details, but what is the actual physical reality? Is it the Hilbert space and the Abelian state vector and a distinguished set of observables, or is it just the Hilbert space and the Abelian state vector and the Hamiltonian? Because the rules for the splitting obviously are going to depend on how you answer that.
Yeah, the first thing you said, I think, roughly. So the Hilbert space, an evolving state vector, and a preferred set of observables. We need to know the Hamiltonian in order to find out what the preferred basis will be.
The preferred basis is emergent, it's not
put in. Right.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Isn't something put in, like which are the position observables? Isn't there some preferred set of observables also put in? Not this pointer basis.
Yeah, we need to have a sense in which things like positions of particles are more natural observables, preferred observables, rather than an arbitrary, horrendously non-local thing that I could mathematically write down. And we also need the Hamiltonian. Okay, so suppose that we have such a branching structure. Then we also have something that's mathematically speaking a probability measure on our set of branches. So if this is a string of projectors representing a particular history, and this is the Hilbert space vector that represents the state of the universe, then the quantum weight of I, of branch number I, is just defined to be the squared norm of this quantity, the quantity you get when you hit the Hilbert space vector with that string of projectors. So I want to stress that the worry about probability in an Everett interpretation is not a mathematical one. It's not a worry about where these numbers come from. These numbers are physical properties of branches. The worry is rather that in a many worlds interpretation, there no longer seems to be the appropriate sort of meaning available for these numbers. They're just numbers that sit on branches. They don't do anything, or so the worry is going to be. So this is a quote from Danker and Kent's discussion of the consistent histories formalism. And this is where they're investigating lots of different interpretive glosses one might put on the mathematics of the consistent histories formalism. And at this point, they're considering two alternatives. Alternative number one, say that precisely one of these histories represents physical reality and that the rest are just unactualized possibilities. And that gives you get something like a stochastic collapse interpretation. Alternative number two, go the many worlds route and say that all of these histories are physically real. They think that we can't go the many worlds route for this reason. If one postulates that all of the histories are realized, then no role has been assigned to the probabilities. And furthermore, there doesn't seem to be any obvious way of introducing further assumptions which would allow probabilistic statements to be deduced. So Dacre and Kent's conclusion from this is we have to reject the many worlds approach. I'm going to argue that that's not the case. So just a
yeah. Before you go on, maybe go back to this, the little comment that not use relative frequency. There is the argument in Finkelstein and Hartle and so forth that you can derive relative frequency given what you have. So are you going to tell us why you don't believe that?
Okay. I don't believe that because you can't prove that relative frequencies match single case probabilities on all branches. What you can prove is that relative frequencies match single case chances on a set of branches of measure one in the limit as the number of trials go to infinity. But the measure we're using is precisely the one that we're currently suspicious of. So the problem is that the branches where anomalous statistics occur are still physically real in this interpretation, and we might be worried about that.
Maybe that to be discussed later.
Okay. So here's a picture to try and just bring out more sharply why we're worried about the meaning of probability ascriptions. Suppose that you're a many worlds theorist and you're about to perform some experiment that has two possible outcomes, spin up and spin down, and regular quantum mechanics tells you that the probability of spin up is 2/3 and the probability of spin down is 1/3. In a many worlds interpretation, this has now become a prediction that there's going to be a splitting event at the emergent level, and there's definitely going to be some spin up branch, there's definitely going to be some spin down branch, and we have these branch weights, but we don't yet know what they mean. So if this guy, before the splitting has occurred, tries to say something like, the chance that the outcome will be spin up is 2/3. In other words, the sort of thing that we normally want to say as quantum theoreticians, that doesn't seem to make any sense. It doesn't make sense because this guy knows that with probability 1, the spin up branch is going to be real. He also knows that with probability 1, the spin down branch is going to be real. You might try to make sense of it by saying, oh, he's talking about the chance that he'll be on the spin up branch. But you think about it for a couple more seconds and you realize that this doesn't make sense either, because he also knows there's going to be a future copy of himself here seeing spin up and a future copy of himself here seeing spin down. You might try to say, oh, he's talking about the chance that his consciousness is going to go this way, but mind-body dualism is false, so we don't want to do that either, and this seems to exhaust the options. Okay, so I'm going to try to argue against that worry that in whatever sense ascriptions of probability don't make sense in a many worlds interpretation, we don't need them. In other words, I'm trying to argue that we can get everything we need from quantum probability in a many worlds framework. Okay, so section two, here I want to say a few words about the decision theoretic approach to Everettian probability that's been developed by David Deutsch and David White. So here's a worry you might have if you suddenly overnight become a many worlds theorist. Suppose you are sitting on a committee that is deciding which of two possible nuclear power plants to design. Your engineers come to you and they say, well, we have design A and we have design B, and we've done our quantum computations, and what we've figured out is the quantum probability that there'll be a nuclear disaster if you build your power plant according to each of these designs. And here's how the numbers come out. According to design A, the quantum probability of nuclear disaster is extremely small. It's not quite zero, but it's extremely small. And according to design B, the numbers come out the other way around. The quantum probability of disaster is extremely close to one. And you have to make a practical decision, namely, are you going to choose design A or design B? Well, this appears to be a no-brainer. Of course, you want to minimize the quantum probability of nuclear disaster. But if you've become a many-worlds theorist, you might start getting a bit worried about this. You might start getting worried because you think, well, gee, whichever of these designs I go with, there's definitely going to be some branch where everything works out fine, and there's definitely going to be some branch where there's a nuclear disaster, so what am I going to do? So you might think becoming a many worlds theorist raises a confusion about how you're supposed to use your theory as a guide to life in the way that you are accustomed to doing. This problem is the problem that Deutsch and Wallace's decision theoretic approach is tackling. So, well, I'll tell you what their punchline is going to be and then sketch a few of the formal details of their program. Deutsch's idea is, okay, first, notice that even if you're a many worlds theorist, this choice that you have to make still makes sense. You're going to be realizing a different branching future structure if you choose design A than if you choose design B. So you might have been worried about whether it makes sense to talk of these things as chances, but you shouldn't be worried about whether it makes sense to talk of this thing as being a decision. So that's something we can use to start getting a handle on what's going on here.
I'm not sure I'm entirely comfortable with the use of the word decision, because there's a probability one instance in which a little part of your brain flips over and says, yes, I'm going to choose to build design A, and a probability of chance one, there's a universe in which your brain decides to build chart.
It's still the case that if you choose A, if you resolve to choose A, you end up realizing a different branching multiverse than if you resolve to choose B.
Yeah, but you're not really choosing A or B. The universe is just splitting into universes where you think you make the decision, but in actual fact you don't have any free choice because every possible choice is being made.
The branch rates are different in the two cases.
Yeah, that's what you're getting to.
Yeah.
But why are there two cases? You've said that we should, instead of thinking about either there's a disaster or there's not a disaster, as a many worlds system, I'm going to say, well, there's, you know, both are real. So I say, well, there's just four branches, and all four of them are real, and one of them is the one where I make A, and one of them is where I make B.
But it's like in a normal deterministic theory, you don't really make any choices, but you still...
If we're going to say that collapse doesn't happen, do the choices have choices?
Are you perceiving that the choice is actually being made by a quantum event?
Okay, well, I'll try answering it briefly, but if the brief answer doesn't work, maybe we can save it for the end. Okay, so a first-pass attempt at saying why it's the case that you get a different multiverse if you choose this one than if you choose this one would be the following, and you're not going to like this, but I'll then give you a second-pass attempt. Okay. So check mark means everything works out okay. X means nuclear disaster. I was trying to say initially, if you choose design A, what you're choosing is to realize this multiverse. If you choose design B, what you're choosing is to realize this multiverse. Your objection was then, well, no, this is too idealized, because in each of these cases, there are going to be some other branches of extremely low weight where the alternative decision gets made, because something goes wrong between me trying to choose A and me actually choosing A. So we've got to worry about these branches to give them weight C squared and D squared, very small but non-zero, where things are the other way around. That's true, but this branch of multiverse is still distinct from this one. Decision A accidentally gets made after I resolve to do B. So I can still make my claim, trying to decide to do A results in a different branching multiverse than trying to decide to do B, if we're prepared to grant that in principle, having different weights can count as realizing a different multiverse. Okay, if that's not satisfactory, let's think about that. Okay, so I was going to say what the punchline of the Deutsch-Wallace program is supposed to be. The claim is, if you are a rational agent and you believe a many worlds interpretation, here's how you make practical decisions. You maximize expected utility in the following sense. Attach utilities to things that happen on individual branches. and average the utility that results from a given decision over branches, where the measure that you're averaging with respect to is the natural quantum measure. If you do that, then you're still going to choose design A over design B, because the good thing happens on the higher weight branch according to design A, whereas the bad thing happens on the higher weight branch according to design B.
So why choose the natural quantum measure?
Why not?
Well, I can choose any other weird thing where
okay.
I think that the very weird branches where you see funny probabilities happening somehow have a large weight.
Yeah, so okay. So I'm going to completely scroll over that SE. So you might think there can't be any watertight argument that rational agents have to behave this way. There's been a big discussion of this in the literature. Let me ask you to just suppose, for the sake of argument, that all rational agents really do behave this way, if they come to believe the many worlds interpretation. Let's first see whether, if true, that will be enough. And when we've done that, maybe we can talk later about why you might think that this policy is more rational than the sort of alternative you're talking about. Okay, so just a brief sketch of what Deutsch and Wallace are up to. This is not essential to the claim that I'm making, but maybe it's useful to go through. What Deutsch and Wallace are trying to do is prove a representation theorem. That is, they want to start from preferences over possible choices of action and prove that what I just said was true. And you prove that all agents who obey their rationality constraints maximize expected utility with respect to the quantum branch rates. So first you define a set of quantum games. These are given by triples, psi xp. So here, this is an initial state of an object system that you're about to perform a measurement on. X is a measurement operator, and P is a payoff function. So a payoff function is something that assigns to each eigenvalue of the measurement operator in question the reward that you're going to get on the branch where that eigenvalue is observed. So in the example that I've drawn here, where you've got a spin system that we're going to carry out a measurement on, the measurement operator is just spin. So we're going to get these two branches, a spin-up branch and a spin-down branch. And in this case, the payoff function is assigning the reward of $100 to spin-up and the reward of $1,000 to spin-down. So you can imagine writing down a set of all possible quantum gains. And then you put some rationality constraints on a rational agent's preference ordering among such games. So an obvious one is transitivity. If you prefer game A to game B and game B to game C, then if you're rational, you also prefer game A to game C. There are five or six other constraints. And it turns out that these are necessary and sufficient for the claim that I made on the previous slide to be true. Namely, for it to be the case that you're always preferring game A to game B, if and only if game A has higher expected utility than game B, according to the quantum branch rate. So this is what Deutsch means when he makes this claim. The rational agent who has come to believe in many worlds interpretation acts as if the Born rule were true. If we grant this, at least for the sake of argument, then it follows that coming to believe in many worlds version of quantum mechanics makes precisely no difference to the way you go about your everyday life. You don't, for example, start committing quantum suicide. Okay, so you might wonder how we're supposed to think about the quantum branch weights when agents are maximizing expected utility with respect to it in a many worlds interpretation. In a non-many worlds interpretation, it's fairly clear what's going on. The reason rational agents maximize expected utility with respect to the quantum chances is the quantum chances govern their degrees of belief that the corresponding outcome is going to occur. So they're trying to choose actions that are likely to lead to good outcomes. In a many worlds case, we can't say this because we know that this agent has degree of belief one that there will be a spin-up branch and degree of belief one that there will be a spin-down branch. So it can't be that he's maximizing expected utility with respect to his degrees of belief. So here's a suggestion for how you might think about the way he's treating this quantum branch measure. He's treating it as a measure of the extent to which he cares about this branch as opposed to that one. So this agent would prefer us to use a payoff function that switches these two rewards because he cares more about what happens on the spin-up branch than on the spin-down branch. So for this reason, I suggest talking about the natural branch measure in the decision-theoretic context as being a caring measure. Okay, suppose all of that's right. So suppose that two things are true. We've managed to get somehow from the quantum state as being our only piece of fundamental ontology to an emergent branching structure that has a natural measure on it. And furthermore, we've accepted that rational agents maximize expected branch utility with respect to this particular measure. The question that I want to ask and then go on to try to answer is this good enough? If we've accepted all that, can we now say the many worlds interpretation is fine as far as the interpretation of probability goes, or should we still be worried? So, section 3, I'm going to try and get you to be worried, and section 4, I'm going to try and tell you not to worry. So here's why you should worry. What we want to know at the end of the day is whether or not these branch weights that the many worlds interpretation gives us can do all of the work that we need quantum probability to do. So the first thing to do is to identify precisely what that work is. Why do we need probabilities in a quantum theory? It seems to me there are precisely two reasons we need them. The first is the one that I've already talked about. You need to know how to use your theory as a guide to life. You need to know how you're supposed to act if you've somehow come to believe that this many worlds version of quantum mechanics is true. Deutsch and Wallace have talked about that problem. However, here's a second thing that we want probabilities to do. We want to have a reason for taking our theory seriously in the first place on the basis of experimental outcomes that we've in fact observed. So, and this story usually has a lot to do with quantum probabilities. So we should also worry that in the move from... We should also try to ascertain that in the move from a non-many-worlds version of quantum mechanics to a many-worlds version, we haven't messed up that confirmation relationship between evidence and theory. Let me say a bit more about what that problem is supposed to be. So go back to a stereotypical confirmation of quantum mechanics. I do a two-slit experiment. I get my quantum mechanical theory to predict an interference pattern something like this. Then I observe that the outcome of the experiment is indeed a pattern something like this. And then it seems reasonable to say, well, this counts as empirical confirmation of quantum mechanics. But look a bit more closely and we see that this story has something to do with probability. The reason it has something to do with probability is that quantum mechanics did not predict with probability one or with certainty that the outcome would be this interference pattern. What it predicted was that with probability close to one, it will be that the outcome of the experiment will be this. So we might worry that replacing the usual sense of quantum probability with the many world sense messes up this statement. Here's another way of saying what the problem is. Compare and contrast the following two sentences. The first sentence is going to be what you say if you're thinking of quantum mechanics in a non-many worlds interpretation. The second one is what you say if you're a many worlds theorist. And the worry is going to be that the first paragraph makes perfect sense and that the second one's bizarre. If you think that, then you think that this second problem for a many worlds interpretation is worrying. So here's the first paragraph. Quantum mechanics predicted that the relative frequency would approximately equal some number r with very high probability. We observed relative frequency r. This gives us a reason to regard quantum mechanics as empirically confirmed. This sounds perfectly reasonable, I take it. Here's the many worlds version, the many worlds translation of that. Many worlds quantum mechanics predicted that the relative frequency would approximately equal r on the majority of branches according to this measure that I'm calling a Kering measure and that we've accepted has some decision theoretic relevance. We've observed relative frequency r on our branch. This gives us a reason to regard many worlds quantum mechanics as empirically confirmed. Now, it's at least far less obvious that this is a valid chain of reasoning. If it's not a valid chain of reasoning, then the many worlds theory has a serious problem. The problem is of the character of what we might think of as empirical incoherence. So a theory that's empirically incoherent is supposed to be a theory that is not flat out contradictory with our experience. So there are agents within a many worlds branching multiverse who see precisely what we've seen. So the worry isn't that our experience actually contradicts the theory. It's also not logically inconsistent. So there is a possible world that is as described by many worlds quantum mechanics. But the worry is that even though the world described by many worlds quantum mechanics is possible, we could never have empirical reason for believing that we're in such a world. And I've got a side comment to the effect that Boltzmann got himself into this situation, which I can explain later if wanted. Okay, so that's what the epistemic problem is. Okay, so I guess one more way to say it is, you might worry that in many worlds there is unfalsifiable, right? It basically says everything that can happen will happen on some branch. And you might worry that unfalsifiable theories are not theories that we can justify believing in on the basis of evidence.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
At this level of discussion, should it be under consideration a relative degree of belief between the many worlds quantum mechanics and some alternate? Well, because your statement is absolutely, I accept that or I don't accept that. But it might be that you might say, do I accept this, that this is more likely, or say that a Bohmian version of probabilistic quantum mechanics would be more likely. And I might think about it differently comparatively than I would think about it given this or nothing.
Right.
Since that's actually the decision that you want me to make, that not just that the many worlds interpretation is coherent, but that it's preferable to other interpretations. I presume that's the decision you want me to make.
Well, I don't want to make that decision on the basis of considerations of probability. You might make that decision on the basis of considerations of relativity or ontological parsimony or something else. All I'm trying to argue in the case of probability is that the many worlds theory is no worse off than any other theory. So I want it to be the case that things like two-slit experiments empirically confirm a many worlds theory to precisely the same degree to which they confirm other approaches to quantum mechanics.
So there is that comparative element.
Yeah. I think it doesn't matter too much at this stage because I'm trying to give you as many reasons as possible for being confused and or worried about this sort of problem, and then I'm going to go on to give you a more precise framework that I think is actually the right way to think about it, in which the problem goes away, and the framework that I go on to advocate will be one where the comparative element comes into it. Okay, so that's the problem. What, according to me, is the solution? Okay, I want to take the following strategy to solving this problem. The first step of the strategy is to take a step back and ask more carefully exactly why it is that things like two-slit experiments are taken to empirically confirm quantum mechanics when we're not talking about many worlds. And I want to advocate looking at this in a Bayesian framework. And also I'll say how, according to the Bayesian framework, it comes to be the case that things like two-slit experiments confirm quantum mechanics. With that in place, I want to then say, okay, if we're taking that Bayesian sort of approach, how should we talk about the issue of empirical confirmation when we're thinking of agents, one of whose epistemic possibilities are a many-worlds theory? And I want to argue that by applying the same sort of arguments that we ordinarily use to the case of many-worlds, the result that the many-worlds theorist wants drops out, that is, that things like two-slit experiments confirm many-worlds to precisely the same extent to which they confirm ordinary quantum mechanics. Okay, so first let me try to tell you why you should be a Bayesian and then say how a Bayesian would look at the relationship between two-slit experiments and an ordinary collapsed version of quantum mechanics. So you started thinking about empirical confirmation of theories, and something like the following seems to be on roughly the right track. It seems that we accept a principle roughly along the following lines. If your theory predicted that outcome X would probably occur, and you see X, then you've gained evidence for your theory. Something like this is roughly right, but this is not precisely right. It's easy to see that it's not precisely right by, for example, plugging in something in place of X in this principle. Then we get the following. If your theory predicted that something would probably occur and you see something, then you've gained evidence for your theory. Okay, empirical confirmation of theories can't be that easy. What this shows is that we need a more sophisticated theory of confirmation. A theory of confirmation that will explain what's right about this, but not go wrong in the way that this principle sometimes goes wrong. So the model that does that is the Bayesian one that I'm about to skip. Okay, let's simplify vastly so that I have a situation I can actually draw. Suppose that I'm only considering two possible theories. Quantum mechanics is one of them, and quantum mechanics here is supposed to mean a non-branching version of quantum mechanics, so it's not a many worlds theory. And then I've got my alternative theory. The alternative theory is T. This is just whatever I think is true if quantum mechanics is false. So this is obviously vastly idealized because if general is going to be some long disjunction of, you know, every theory I can possibly think of other than quantum mechanics, along with some common sense sector that doesn't really look like physical theory at all, But it won't be damaging for present purposes to lump all of those together and just call them theory T. So suppose we've done that. And then suppose that I'm going to perform an experiment that has just two possible outcomes, and calling them R and not R. You can, if you like, think of R as being the proposition that, so think of it as being a relative frequency experiment, and think of this outcome R as being the proposition that the relative frequency approximately matches the quantum mechanical chance. You can think of it that way, it's not essential. What's essential is that R is something that's very probable according to quantum mechanics and not so probable according to theory T. So it's the right kind of thing that we would expect to confirm quantum mechanics ordinarily. Okay, so suppose I've done that. I've got two possible theories, I've got two possible outcomes. Combining these, I get four possible worlds. In this diagram, I've got time going up the screen, and each vertical line represents one possible world. So this is the possible world where theory T is true and outcome R occurs. This is the world where theory T is true and outcome not R occurs. These are the quantum mechanical versions. This time here is the time at which the measurement occurs. Okay, so to talk about empirical confirmation, what we want to think of is the following situation. I have an agent. My agent at time T0 has some definite degree of belief that quantum mechanics is true. So her credence state at this time is represented by a probability measure over this set of four possible worlds. Then the experiment happens, and as a result of the experiment, our agent gets some new piece of information about which possible world she's in. She either learns that R occurs, that is, she learns that she's in one of these two possible worlds, or she learns that not R occurs, that is, she learns that she's in one of these two possible worlds. In response to this new piece of information, our agent is going to update her degrees of belief, and what we want to know is, how does that belief updating work? Okay, one preliminary. We don't allow the agent to have just any old credence function on this set of four possible worlds at time T0. There's a constraint. The constraint is that her credence function has to respect the quantum mechanical chances in the following sense. When you restrict to this part of possibility space, so when you consider the ratio of the agent's credence in this possible world to her credence in that possible world, that ratio has to be equal to the ratio of the quantum mechanical chance that R occurs to the quantum mechanical chance that not R occurs. All that's saying is, it's not okay, it's not rational for the agent to say, I think that the chance of R according to quantum mechanics is 0.99, but my degree of belief that R occurs conditional on the proposition that quantum mechanics is true is 0.1. That's not okay. Credences have to track chances. So we have this principle. And then we want to know how rational belief updating works. So to specify a belief updating policy, what we need to do is specify two further probability measures on this set of four possible worlds. So we need to say, what is the agent's credence function going to be if she observes R, that's this probability measure, and what's her credence function going to be at time T2 if she observes not R, that's this probability measure. So in these two possible worlds, this probability measure on the set of four possible worlds represents her epistemic state at this time. In the yellow possible worlds is this probability measure that represents her epistemic state at the later time. Our agent has to make an epistemic decision, if you like. She has to select from the large mathematical space of probability measures on this set of four possible worlds which these two probability measures are going to be. And there's a standard...
Is it centered world?
Did I? Sorry, that shouldn't be there. It's just world. It's going to be centered world when we get to the many worlds case. And I'll say what it means when we get to the many worlds case. Okay, so we want to pick a belief updating policy. We want it to be a rational one. The standard Bayesian answer is, if you're rational, you update your beliefs by just conditionalizing on what you've seen. So that is to say, this possible posterior, the one that you move to if you see R, is given by taking your initial credence function and conditionalizing on R. The posterior credence function that you move to if you see not R is given by taking your initial credence function and conditionalizing on not R. And then we note the following mathematical fact. If our agent obeys two constraints, constraint number one, her initial credence function obeys the principle. So this is jargon. This just means her initial credence function respects the chances in the way that I described. And if, in addition, the agent updates according to this belief updating policy, then the following thing will be true. Observing outcome R increases her degree of belief in quantum mechanics at the expense of degree of belief in the alternative theory T. This is true because we stipulated that R was going to be the sort of thing that was more likely according to quantum mechanics than according to the rival theory. So that's what it means in the Bayesian model to say that observing outcomes like R counts as empirical confirmation of quantum mechanics. Are there any questions about how this model works? Because what I want to do next is pick up this model, plant it onto the many worlds case, and see what happens. Okay, so now we replace quantum mechanics with a many worlds version of quantum mechanics. Some things are going to change. What I'm going to try to argue is the things that change are irrelevant to the questions that we're interested in. So what's happening now is our agent, again, has two candidate theories. Many worlds is one of them, and theory T is the other one. I've drawn theory T as though it's a non-branching theory. That's not essential either. I'm just picking things that give me simple pictures. If we do that, then we get three possible worlds, not four. So this is the first thing that's changed. We only get three possible worlds because now what happens in the many worlds case is that both of these branches are supposed to be physically real at the same time if many worlds is true. So this is now one branching structure rather than being two possible worlds as it was a couple of slides ago. However, although we only have three possible worlds, we have four centered possible worlds at the later time. What does that mean? Well, a centered possible world is just given by a pair consisting of a possible world and a location of an agent within that world. The motivation for talking about centered worlds is if you imagine being in this sort of situation, after a splitting event will have occurred if many worlds is true. And now you ask yourself, what's the space on which my credence function is defined? It's going to be this set of four centered worlds, not the set of three possible worlds. The reason being that you are now, at this time, you're now uncertain not only about whether or not many worlds is true, but you're also uncertain, conditional on the supposition that this theory is true, about which branch you're located in. So if we introduce the concept of a centered world, then we have the resources we need to write down the space on which the later credence functions are going to be defined. Okay, so we have four of these centered worlds.
Is there some difference between the term centered world and branch as people use it?
Centered world is more general, so you can imagine agents who are not sure what time it is. So they might be certain about which branch they're on, but they're not sure whether they're the portion of an agent located at 3 o'clock or the portion of an agent located at 4 o'clock. For present purposes, the two notions coincide. Okay. So now the question that I want to ask is how rational belief updating ought to go for an agent whose space of epistemic possibilities, the space of things that she's uncertain about, has this sort of structure. Notice that the following question still makes sense. So I'm trying to pull trigger analogous to the one that Deutsch was pulling when he said, whatever does not make sense in many worlds, probability-wise, asking agents to make decisions still makes sense. The question that I want to ask here is, what's the agent's epistemic decision going to be in this case? She still has to commit herself to adopting some credence function in these two centered worlds and some, in general, different credence function in these two centered worlds. So she still has this epistemic decision to make, and the epistemic decision is going to be specified by specifying the possible posterior credence function that she's going to move to here and here, and the possible posterior credence function that she's going to move to here and here. And the only question is going to be, are there any important differences between the way that this epistemic decision works in the many worlds case and the way that it works in the non-many worlds case? Okay. So I'm going to advocate an epistemic policy according to which pieces of evidence like observing outcome R or observing outcomes of two slit experiments, that sort of common or garden empirical evidence, is going to confirm a many worlds theory in precisely the same way that it confirms a non-many worlds theory. I'll do it by sketching two possible updating policies. This one I call naive conditionalization. This is going to be a policy that at first sight seems to have something intuitively going for it. I want to discuss it because I think it captures lots of the intuitions that we have when we're getting worried about probability in many worlds. And then I'll say why this cannot possibly be the rational way to update your beliefs. Extended conditionalization is the updating policy that I want to advocate for agents in the sort of situation that I'm talking about. This is going to be the policy that gives the result that many worlds theorists want. They're both going to be generalizations of ordinary conditionalization in the following sense. If you restrict to the case of an agent who has zero degree of belief that a world is a branching one, you recover the usual conditionalization rule. But these two policies disagree with one another about how belief updating goes when a many worlds theory is among the theories that the agent is considering. Okay, so naive conditionalization. This is the bad guy, but it's the guy who captures some of our intuitions. So I might try to justify a particular updating policy in the following way. First intuition. We said that, well, we accepted for the sake of argument that rational agents are going to have a caring measure on this set of many worlds branches. This is going to be the measure that they use for making practical decisions, and we accepted for the sake of argument that this caring measure is going to be equal to the quantum branch rate. But the first intuition is that object has only decision theoretic relevance. It's not going to have anything to do with justifying beliefs and theories. Second intuition, suppose that I ask you the following question at time t0. What is your degree of belief that R occurs? It seems, perhaps, that the right way to answer this question is by reasoning as follows. Well, if this possible world is actual, then R occurs. Here it is. If this possible world is actual, then R doesn't occur. If this possible world is actual, well, then I know that R occurs in some branch, so, okay, R occurs. If you're thinking in that sort of way, then a very natural way to answer the question, what's the degree of belief at time t0 that R occurs, is to say, well, it's just going to be my degree of belief that this world is actual plus my degree of belief that this world is actual. So suppose that we do that. Suppose that we define credence at time t0 that R occurs in this way. If we do that, then we're now in a position to just formally apply the usual conditionalization rule to this agent's time t0 credence function. We've now defined credence at time t0 in R, so we can just write down the usual formula and say, of course this is the way to generalize conditionalization to the case of an agent who has non-zero credence that the world is like this. Call that policy naive conditionalization, and obviously do the analogous construction for the other credence, possible posterior credence function that the agent has to pick, to one that she's going to move to at time t2, here and here. So we've got a possible updating policy. It's mathematically well defined. What I want to suggest is that it's crazy, that no rational agent can possibly update it this way. Here's the reason. It's not too hard to see that if you have an agent who updates according to this rule, then the following thing is going to happen. Her credence in many worlds quantum mechanics is going to increase at the expense of her credence in any theory that assigns probability less than 1 to the outcome that she's observed, regardless of which outcome she observes. So credence at time t2 in the many worlds theory is going to be greater than credence at time t0 in the many worlds theory if she's seen R, and also if she's seen not R. That's going to be true. Now, it's not surprising that this bizarre consequence is a consequence of naive conditionalization. The reason it's not surprising is when I wrote down the naive conditionalization updating policy, the intuition that I was essentially capturing was the one that says if you see something that your theory predicted was probable, then your theory has been confirmed. And at the same time, I was capturing the intuition that according to the many worlds theory, everything has probability 1. So no surprise then that according to this updating policy, everything counts as confirming quantum mechanics. However, I take it that it's obvious that no rational updating policy can have this consequence. So what we learn from this is that naive conditionalization, however plausible it might have seemed, is not the rational way to update beliefs if you've got non-zero credence in a branching universe theory. In other words, if we're interested in the question of how rational belief updating goes, we'd better throw away this updating policy and look elsewhere. So that's the next thing that I want to do. I'm going to proceed in two stages here. So extended conditionalization is the policy that I'm going to try to defend. In the first stage, I'll just define it mathematically. So this stage should be uncontentious, so I'm just running down some math. On the next slide, I'll start to say why I think this is the rational way to update beliefs. If anything is contentious in what I say, it's going to be that second stage. So here's the construction. What I'm trying to do here is just mathematically construct an updating policy, so a specification of these two posterior credence functions that will have the consequence that the many worlds theorist wants, namely the consequence that observing things like R confirms the many worlds theory to precisely the same degree to which it confirms a non-many worlds version of quantum mechanics. Here's the construction. First, I'm going to construct something I'm calling CR prime zero. This is the effective credence function at time t0, and it's constructed from the two pieces of information we already have about the state of the agent's head at time t0. So we've got her credence function, we've got her Kerrig measure, this is the measure on the set of branches within the many worlds multiverse. Using this, we can define a measure on the set of four centered worlds at time t2. I'm not going to call it a credence function because it doesn't seem to make sense to ask for credence at time t0 that I'm going to be on some particular branch in the many worlds theory. I'm calling it a quasi-credence function because in a certain sense it's going to behave like a credence function. So here's the construction. If you want, so I'm trying to define a measure on this set of four centered worlds, so I'll just do it by giving you the numbers that this measure assigns to each of the centered worlds. In the case of non-branching worlds, effective credence is just equal to credence. So quasi-credence in this possible world is equal to credence in that possible world. Quasi-credence in this possible world is equal to credence in the same possible world. In the many worlds case, effective credence and credence diverge. So effective credence in the many worlds branch on which R occurs is given by the product of the following two things. Credence that the many worlds possible world is the actual one, multiplied by the agent's Kerrig measure in the branch that we're interested in. And effective credence in this other centered world, so this is the branch where many worlds is true and not R occurs, is given by the product of the analogous two quantities. So suppose we've done that construction. We've defined this measure. It's a measure on the set of centered worlds at a later time. Now we're in a position to, again, borrow the formal expression that usually defines conditionalization and define an updating policy by applying that conditionalization formula to this measure. So suppose that we do that. We say credence at time t2, having seen r, is given by effective credence at time t0, conditionalized on r, and similarly for the second possible posterior. This is the policy we want. It's the policy we want because in constructing effective credence in many worlds branches in this way, I'm treating the Kerrig measure as if it was a credence. So I'm treating the quantum branch rates as if they were chances, and that's why this policy gives us the result that we want. Okay, so that was the construction. Here's the attempt to defend the claim that this is actually the rational way to update belief. What I'm going to do is go back and ask more carefully in the non-many worlds case precisely why it is that we think that rational agents update their degrees of belief by conditionalization. So the idea here is, recall that in the usual story about why two-step experiments confirm quantum mechanics, an essential ingredient of the story was the step where we said rational agents update by conditionalization. Now in the non-many worlds case, this strikes most people as obvious. Of course, rational agents update their degrees of belief that way. But usefully, the Bayesian literature also contains a number of substantive arguments in defense of the claim that conditionalization is the right way to update beliefs. This is useful in the present context because it means that we can go beyond appeals to intuition when we're trying to work out how rational updating goes in the many worlds case. We can, instead of just appealing to intuition, borrow those Bayesian arguments and see what the same sorts of arguments show in the many worlds case. What I'm going to claim is the same sorts of arguments that we usually use to defend conditionalization in the non-many worlds case are going to defend extended conditionalization in the case that the many worlds theorist is interested in. So I'll just sketch one such argument briefly. This is the diachronic Dutch book argument. So the idea here is we proceed as following. First, assume that degrees of belief give betting quotients. This is true for any agent who maximizes expected utility. Then define a fair bet as follows. A fair bet is a bet with zero net expected utility. So that is, the expected utility of accepting the bet as bettor is equal to the expected utility of accepting the bet as bookie, and is also equal to the expected utility of not accepting the bet at all. So if I construct a fair bet, this is a bet such that the agent doesn't care whether she takes the bet or not. She regards it as fair according to her degrees of belief. The Dutch book theorem is the following claim. You can prove that if you have an agent who updates by any updating policy other than conditionalization, then a Dutch book can be made against her. This means that there exists a set of bets. Some offered at the earlier time, before the new piece of information has come in. So it's offered at time t0, the measurement hasn't yet been made. Some of the bets are offered at time t2, after the new piece of information has come in. And this set of bets has the following two properties. Property number one, the agent regards each bet in the set as fair at the time that it's offered. Property number two, if the agent accepts all of the bets in this set, then she is guaranteed a net loss in every possible world. So susceptibility to this sort of Dutch book is generally taken to be an indicator of irrationality, somehow or other. If you think that, then you think that what this Dutch book theorem proves is that conditionalization is the rational way to update beliefs. So suppose that we've defended conditionalization in the non-many worlds case by using this Dutch book argument. Then it gives me what the many world theorist wants in the more general case. The key observation is that when we accepted with Deutsch and Wallace that rational agents maximize expected utility over branches, what we accepted effectively is that at time t0, the agent is maximizing expected utility with respect not just to her credence function, but to the thing that I describe as being the effective credence function. So this is the thing that combines credences and caring measures over branches. Given that that's true, then what we get when we apply the Dutch book theorem to this case is the following. If the agent updates in any way other than by conditionalizing on this object, then a Dutch book can be made against her. So at time t0, she's assessing the fairness of bets using this thing. At time t2, she's assessing the fairness of bets using her posterior credence functions. So it's those two things that have to be related according to the conditionalization rule if she's to avoid a Dutch book. So I take it that insofar as being susceptible to a sure loss in every possible world is an indicator of irrationality, so also susceptibility to a sure loss on every possible branch is an indicator of irrationality. Hence, insofar as the Dutch book theorem defended conditionalization in the ordinary case, it shows that extended conditionalization is the rational way to update beliefs when you've got an agent who has non-zero credence in branching. The Bayesian literature, incidentally, is full of a number of other arguments for conditionalization, but all of them give the same result. When you pick them up and you plant them on the many worlds case, they defend this updating policy. So what that shows is that if you have an agent whose decision theoretic policy is the one advocated by Deutsch and Wallace, then she has to update in such a way that things like two-step experiments confirm a many-worlds theory in just the same way that they confirm any other sort of quantum mechanics. So before I give you my final conclusions, I wanted to make a couple of brief comments about what the trick is that I've been pulling. Because we started out with this intuition that you could have this caring measure and you could concede that it had decision theoretic relevance and yet still be worried about whether or not empirical confirmation of theories was going to work out in the way the many worlds theorist needs. We started off with an intuition that it shouldn't be relevant to belief updating, it shouldn't be relevant to confirmation. I'm now claiming that it is relevant to confirmation, so how could that possibly be the case? Here's how it could possibly be the case. The first move was to say, when we're talking about empirical confirmation of theories, what we're really doing is talking about rational belief updating. So that was the move that I made when I went to the Bayesian model. Second move, say that the question of which belief updating policy is rational is the question of which possible epistemic action is rational. So you've got this agent at time t0, she's choosing how she's going to update her beliefs. There's this big mathematical space of possible ways to update. She's trying to pick the rational one. So I'm thinking of an updating policy as an epistemic action. And then note that this is just another kind of action. So if you've accepted that this caring measure can be relevant to all choices of action, then it should no longer be surprising that it can be relevant to empirical confirmation. That was the shape of the argument. In conclusion, we always knew that an Everett interpretation, a many worlds interpretation, gave us a natural measure over the set of branches. Deutsch and Wallace argued that this measure governs rational action in a particular way. If that's true, then we've solved the practical problem of probability in Emmanuel's interpretation. We know how to use the theory as a guide to life. I've tried to argue that this measure also governs rational belief in the same way that chance measures govern rational belief. If that's true, then we're justified in believing in Emmanuel's theory on the basis of our empirical data, just as we are in the non-Emmanuel's case. Now, we might have some residual qualms about whether this measure over branches is really probability, given that in some sense all branches actually occur. What I'm trying to suggest is that given that the measure does these two things, we don't have to care whether it's not really probability in some more elevated sense. I don't see what we could want from quantum probability over and above these two things. If that's right, then worries about probability don't give us any reason to reject Emmanuel's interpretation.
Just on the last point you raised. First of all, do you have to, this caring measure that you're talking about, do you have to add that as an extra piece of your ontology?
No, it's a rationality constraint. So it's like saying rational people don't jump out of fourth floor windows.
But if they were using it, if they were using a different, surely everything you said follows, but you could still just use a completely arbitrary measure. Caring measure. I could use one where this goes in Fitz and Gilders that it's in all the coins come up heads. I could say that's very, very likely to happen in my crazy measure. And I don't see how it contradicts anything in the ontology. I mean, all these branches still exist. I can't see it does exist this natural weighting, but why you should choose that one as the one on which you base your decisions. I don't see any link there unless you're going to introduce an extra part to your ontology which tells you that's what the theory says as another sort of axiom. So.
Okay, well, let me give you a two-stage response to that. First response, I don't see what I could possibly add to my physical ontology that would do with it. I don't see that it would be coherent to add to my physical ontology a prescription that rational agents care about branches in such and such a way. That's just not a physical statement, it's a normative statement. It doesn't fit, it's not the right kind of thing. But second comment, I'm probably more useful. I think that everything you said is right, but I don't think it's a problem that's specific to the many worlds interpretation. So here's the non-many worlds analog. What's wrong with an agent who says, I accept that the objective chance of spin-up is 2/3, but my degree of belief that spin-up will happen is 0.1? I mean, intuition, that guy's kind of weird, but he's not obviously contradicting himself, and he's not going to regard relative frequency experiments as confirming many worlds the way most of us do. So there's this general puzzle, what's the connection between objective probability and degrees of belief? The usual response is just to stipulate that there's a connection. But if that's the usual response, let me do that with many worlds theory too.
So the argument is sophisticated, so I'm not sure I understand it, but do you agree with the following? If you've shown, so my theory T is some version of quantum physics in which there's one reality that I live in and the other branches don't exist. So I have some theory T, which is some version of quantum theory, in which, quote, the other branches don't exist. That is, I find myself in this branch, I confirm quantum mechanics in a more conventional way, and I disbelieve in the existence of the other branches.
So it's a collapse theory?
It doesn't matter. I'm not arguing for that. I'm saying, yeah. Suppose that the theory T that you're contrasting in is of that form. And it seems to me what you've done, and the key step was this saying that you're treating every possible branch from the point of view of this argument of rationality as equivalent to every possible world in a more conventional sense. So if that's true, what you seem to have is, what's interesting is the no more, no less, is if you prove that it's no more, precisely no more, no less rational to confirm quantum mechanics on the basis of some evidence, if I believe in many worlds interpretation, then if I believe my theory T, in which I disbelieve in the existence of the other branches, in some sense, you prove that the problem of the interpretation of quantum mechanics is irreconcilable. That is, there is no rational argument that could choose, that could lead me to choose to believe in the many worlds interpretation over the theory T. And therefore, there's no rational decision procedure to decide the problem of quantum mechanics.
Okay, I didn't intend to be making a claim or anything like this strong in work. I intended to be making a much more mundane claim. So I think you could...
No, but you seem to have, along the way, proved that the problem of quantum mechanics is undecidable. That is, that there cannot be a rational argument that could lead one to choose the many worlds interpretation versus a spontaneous collapse theory on the basis of evidence of the kind that you talked about.
Okay, so... two reasons for thinking that might not be the case. Reason number one, I can sometimes find some experiments with the following feature. The branch weight of outcome number one according to many worlds is not numerically equal to the chance of outcome number one according to my non-branching theory. If that's the case, then the result of the claim doesn't show
either. Sure, if that's the case, then standard, sure.
Right. Okay, comment number two, I only intended to be talking about really sort of basic, conceptually non-sophisticated empirical pieces of evidence. So nothing that I've said negates the claim that worrying about, say, compatibility with relativity theory could distinguish between the interpretations. It's highly non-trivial to figure out how you should fit in that sort of theoretical reasoning into a Bayesian framework. I just haven't talked about that.
So I think because we proceed, so we have a break for 20 minutes. Let's have a few of those.